Let's officially welcome everybody again to our Sunday morning Zoom room, the Jesus as Us community. And currently starting a path of conversation through the book of Romans. And see where that leads us. Last Sunday, we started off by talking about irreverence. What is irreverence, and why is it the root cause of all of man's disorders, good or bad? One of our brothers asked this week in response why we missed another key issue that's spoken to in the first chapter, and it sort of comes before even the subject of irreverence, and that's the subject of indignation. What in the world is indignation? And if you've read in your English Bibles, English translations, and I say the English, what I mean by that is your standard English text, King James, New American, those versions that we have. The word that's typically used there is wrath, and which is, it's a suitable rendering of the Greek word. The Greek word is interesting. It's a word, it's the word orge. And that in itself conjures up all kinds of different things to deal with, where the orge is where we get so many terms: organization, orgasm, orgies, all kinds of different things. But in this case, the word is used to describe something in regards to anger, or what's called a settled anger. So the topic is, what is this anger? Who's angry and why? Now, you've been reading and rereading, I trust, through the book. Romans is not a book that's not a letter that's probably like your personal letter of Philippians, or let's say Timothy, or even some like Thessalonians. Romans is considered one of Paul's epic works, one that I think he must have thought he was going to establish something for the world in the way of the truth. And so this was going to have to be his opus. What do they call that when a musician or arranger has his classic greatest work?
I think it's opus.
The Holland's opus.
Okay. Yeah. This is Paul's opus. And you've been reading it, I'm sure, rereading it. It's the book that you have to read and read and reread. And it's very, very good. It's very helpful to read it in this literal translation of the concordant literal, because words come out that you never have seen before. And this word indignation is one of those.
So, Dennis, how would chapter 1, verse 18, how would that read?
And you're reading from which version?
New NIV.
NIV? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Verse 18 in the concordance.
Go ahead.
Concordant literal. For God's indignation is being revealed. God's indignation is being revealed.
His wrath.
Now, by the way, if you've read this first chapter, you realize Paul talks about two revelations. What are those two revelations? Right away in the first chapter, he's talking about two things have been revealed, or are, and this is important too, present tense being revealed. Now, obviously, this, we have to put it in the context historically. This is written somewhere, the best estimations is late 50s, early 60s of the 60 AD. So the first century has not really concluded yet. So this is the latter end of the first century, going on to the second. So what is he talking about being revealed? What are those two things? Two major revelations.
God's righteousness is being revealed, he says.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And we should probably go back sometime and pick up this, the first couple paragraphs, because this is particularly verses 14 and through 17. Mm-hmm. He's talking about his whole, well, he calls it the evangel. And we need to go back and talk about the evangel sometime. That's a word we've been talking about. We haven't really discussed it. We've not looked at it for what it is and why Paul was so taken by this evangel and why it was his mission to declare it. But anyway, in that first paragraph 14 through 17, he's saying, in that evangel, God's righteousness is being revealed. So we have two things, it seems, that are being revealed, present tense, simultaneously. Now, what are your thoughts? Why is he declaring that these things are being revealed currently, speaking of that particular time that in which he was living?
Because the truth is spreading and getting out there, but yet so is the subversion of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the wickedness is becoming apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess discouraging the people or something.
Now, up to this time, what would you say had been the, how had God revealed himself up to this time?
Through nature.
Yeah, that's right. But had people really understood what was going on in terms of God's economy, other than his work in the Jews, what was there any other kind of understanding as to what God was trying to accomplish, or where was God in the world?
I don't know.
My question is too nebulous, I guess, too obscure.
Yeah.
I'm not very good.
I don't know.
I wasn't there.
I don't know how to ask the question. I don't know that, from a historical standpoint, I don't know that people really got a grasp of really where was God in the course of human events in the world. Everything other than the Jews having some kind of special revelation, and they had the law and they were functioning religiously, the rest of the world was pretty much kind of here, there, scattered, all kinds of different things. God was, as Paul says, we talked about last week, God was known, but they weren't being, weren't able to articulate or know him fully.
Wasn't the Dennis, didn't at that time, didn't the false gods play a big part in people's lives, like worshiping goddesses and that type of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
There was, I would say most of the people worshiped the sun back then. All of the, mm-hmm. every different ethnic throughout the globe, they were worshiping the sun. They thought mm-hmm. The sun was a big deal.
Yeah, sun.
Yeah, I think I agree that there were all a myriad of suggestions as to gods and goddesses and different forces behind humanity. Generally, a lot of different ideas, but no real clear truth.
But the commonality is the sun, like from the mm-hmm. from back as far as the Egyptians, the Mesopotamians, the Aztecs, mm-hmm. the Incas, mm-hmm. all of them.
Yeah. Now, as I said, in the midst of all of that, what do we call it, the confusion or mythologies and all those various ways that man was trying to get a hold of cause and effect and what were some of the philosophical meanings to life and the universe. Greeks had their ideas, the Romans had their ideas, and everything was tied to their to the various gods. The sun, you're right, Beth, was the primary. So in the midst of that, you have the Jewish society who pretty much were the only ones who professed that there is one true God. The rest of the world, you know, if you weren't a Jew, mm-hmm. you had all this other whatever. Here comes Paul declaring, now the world is going to see the real truth. Now he plans through this letter to show people what is happening. This dispensation is now going to be a time of revelation into who is the real God, the cause of man's problems, what the effect is. And he's really bringing back into focus what has been there all along, but people just didn't really see it. Two things: God's righteousness and God's indignation. Now, that sounds like God has two sides, right? Which is he? We hit on this last week. Is he an angry God or a loving God?
Let me tell a story here.
We're ready for a story.
Yeah, there, our son Jordan, our only son, who's getting married next week. Of course, Julie and I love him more than anything, and I love him, you know, as I do my wife. I would give anything for my son. Okay. Back when he was in high school and had just gotten his license, between him and us, we were able to get him a really nice Mustang convertible muscle car, V8 engine. He and Clark decided to take it out. Now, he'd had a number of lectures about how to drive. And the next call I get is from the police that there's been a wreck. Mm-hmm. And of course, you imagine what that is. Mm-hmm. And the next scene is that Julie and I are at the location out in a country road, and a right turn, a 20 or 25 mile left turn.
Yeah.
And the car is nose down in the ditch, and the radiator smashed in, and there were words said by Jordan, well, I wasn't going that fast. And I'm looking at the skid marks where the car, they locked the brakes going back 60 feet, and the policeman said, well, I think I'll just leave now. I think he's in good hands with his father. Well, speak of indignation. We had some talks. At one time I shouted at him, he said, well, how do you want me to drive? And I said, like an old grandpa. You know? But you know, we went on in life loving him as much as ever. And to this day, loving him more than anything else we know. I can imagine God having some kind of relevance there to indignation. You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here's Jordan, young man, learning his father has two sides.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy, nice dad, gives his boy brand new cars. What dad wouldn't want to shower a beloved son with nice gifts? But then all of a sudden, now this dad is angry.
Yeah.
Chewing him out, giving him all
that's an understatement.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So great story, Arnold. Somehow now Jordan has seen the opposite.
Yeah. He did indeed.
Yeah. We've been talking all along about the two perspectives of God, that there are two sides to God, aren't there? Mm. And where was that first disclosed?
Garden.
Yeah.
Well, in the garden. Jesus.
There are two trees. One was total union and total synchronization with God, Father. And the other was almost an opposite. Here is God that separated from me, and a God that's fearful, who I'm not sure is pleased or how I can even measure up to. God says, okay, here are the two choices you can have, two ways you can look at me. You can see me as a God that's in your life and united with you and partnering with me in the supervision of the world, creation. Or you can see me as a God who knows good and evil. Which God would you rather know? Or which side of God would you rather know?
Yeah.
Well, what we've learned through our study of Jesus and being redeemed through Jesus, being brought back to our Father, mm-hmm. we see that side of God that is mm-hmm. gracious, mm-hmm. loving, all loving.
And boy, is this not brought out by Jesus himself, when Christ came into the world. Now we see God in a way that the world had not seen for millennia. up to that point, before Jesus, all the world knew of God was a judge, good and evil. You remember when God had a discussion with, you know, whoever else in his personality? Now man is like us, knowing good and evil. Genesis 3:22. That verse is always been a little bit suspect as to whether or not it was really in the original. But when you think about it, God is saying, okay, man is chosen now. He's eaten of the tree of knowledge and he's chosen. He wants to be like one of us, knowing good and evil. God is describing himself. And man chooses, he says, to know this side of me. What is that side? What's this God who knows good and evil? You have a description of what he's talking about there? Why would God describe himself as a God knowing good and evil?
Well, for us, evil could be described as separation from God.
Okay.
I don't know what God could be separated from. Do we know that?
Do we know if we're separated?
No. Well, yes, certainly we can be separated, but we're redeemed. The sin issue has been done away with. And we bask in the love, the graciousness of God. But I don't understand the part where he said, be like us, no good versus evil. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it is a little vague, isn't it, in trying to grasp what is he talking about here? Now, Satan had used that term. And we think Satan, because his nature is to be a liar, was lying about God. Remember? He said to Eve, no, if you eat of this tree, you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. Was he telling the truth? Well, if God describes himself that way, he apparently knew. Satan knew something about God that Eve hadn't seen.
Well, Satan experienced it. He was kicked out of heaven.
And isn't that, there's a clue, isn't it? If Satan was having this, was it at odds with God? Who is the God that Satan knew?
God of indignation.
I know he's ticked at me, but I'm going to do this anyway. So he's at odds with God. And he knows God is going to judge him, knowing good and evil. Isn't that like a juxtaposition? God is going to judge between the two. And that's what you see about God when you see through the tree of knowledge. You see a God who is only concerned about whether you measure up, if you're good or whether you're evil. God becomes a judge.
Yeah.
And you never know which way he's going to judge. Well, you sort of know if you've been living contrary to what he wants, then you're probably going to fall on his, you're going to get it. So you're right, Arnold. He's a God of indignation. He's not happy with you. In fact, he has an anger. Now, just like Satan, to know, well, God's angry at me, I'm going to get some more people who can join me. And that's exactly what he was successful in doing. So is that who God is? Is he a God of indignation?
But like my son, Jordan, I honestly, he can literally do no wrong. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine a situation that I would not love him with all my heart.
Wow. And that's who I believe really the Father prefers us to know him by. Now, you would prefer Jordan to know you from that side, not on your indignation side, right?
Oh, yeah. And you know what? After events like I described earlier, that became lesser and lesser of an issue. And of course, he wasn't a saint, you know? He had to experience beer and girls, you know? Yeah. And, you know?
But, the Bee Gees, huh?
But, you know, just we loved him through all that development, and mm-hmm. today he could actually do nothing that would keep Julie and I from loving him. Now Megan, mm-hmm. who's joining our family,
I don't just know a better description of the loving God, the loving side of God.
Yeah.
Haven't we learned there's a universal truth that everything has to be known by its opposite? Remember, we've talked about mm-hmm. this law of opposites. How can we know what's bitter unless we've known what's sweet? This is why there were two trees, the law of opposites. How do we know what life is until we've tasted death? So it's almost like God purposely puts an opposite for man to experience and to see, so that he'll see the other side. He'll see what's really the opposite of that, which is what God prefers to us to know him by. Well, let me re-ask that question. Which side, which opposite side does God really want us to know him by?
The loving God.
If I'm a dad, like Arnold just described, you'd rather your child know you're loving and forgiving and merciful. I hate it when my kids would say, "Dad's always angry."
Yeah.
I'm not always angry.
That doesn't set well with me. I do it. So back up to what I said a moment ago, here comes Jesus into the world. And what does Jesus show us? And up to this point, the world has known God by this, he's a fearful, jealous, we don't know whether he's going to give it to us or what's going to happen. But here comes Jesus. And what does Jesus display about the Father?
Boy, he's humble, he's meek, he's loving, he's always giving of himself, always, never concerned about self, always giving of the self, you know.
Mostly the love side, but he also showed the indignation side in the marketplace.
He could. There was those glimpses, wasn't there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't just all one side of God. But even in that anger, you can see glimpses of redemptive purpose. You can see why the anchor? Wasn't just, I'm angry at you. No, it was a kind of an anger out of hurt. Like, don't you know what you're doing here? So,
well, he wants his children to be respectful, loving, kind, and he wants us to learn from our own mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here Paul is saying the world is now getting a proper view, a proper understanding through this law of opposites. Here he wants to talk about this life, God's life, love and mercy and grace, this righteousness being revealed. But that also comes along with the revelation of indignation, that there is an opposite.
Dennis, wouldn't that be indignation? Wouldn't that be kind of like a sense of, you know, we all need discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't that be in a sense of God's disciplining us?
Mm-hmm.
Through life,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. you got to have that connection with control and discipline. You know, mm-hmm. self control,
mm-hmm. yeah.
discipline, natural consequences. You know.
Mm-hmm. So, when he says God's indignation, is being revealed against all irreverence and injustice of men, what is he going to describe there? What's that scene, or what's that picture look like? That's not pretty, is it?
Yeah, well. He gave them over to the wickedness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to explore this with you in the coming weeks here. This whole idea of what happens when we are on the indignation side of God, and what are the results of that? What occurs here? We're given over to lust of our hearts, to dishonor our bodies, given over to dishonorable passions. There seems to be a spiral of degeneration that occurs. And it's not pretty. And then look at, if you have your Bibles here, look at verse 28 of the first chapter. Actually, the end of 27 and 28. When he's saying, talking about people who have dishonorable passions, which are really unnatural passions, anything that's kind of, it's against the very nature of who we are as sexual beings. And says, and getting back in themselves the retribution of their deception. What's he mean by that? Getting back in themselves the retribution of their deception.
Hmm. Well, well, the magnitude of allowing ourselves to be deceived, it's awful. You know,
and here's why this video probably won't be put on YouTube. They're some of the highest suicide rates are among people who are living in this alternate lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
These are the statistics that that community will deny passionately. Oh no, we're free. We get to be who we want to be. But at the same time, the records show not only are these people dying from diseases, AIDS, now they're saying monkeypox.
Yeah.
But have one of some of the highest rates of suicide. Now, why? If this lifestyle is so wholesome and happy, and to their way of thinking, free, get to be express myself who I think I really am, why at the same time is there such deep anger and hurt?
According to them, we're not tolerant enough or trying hard enough.
Yeah, we just don't understand them, do we?
Well, I contrast that. I've seen a statistic recently that says people that are married will actually, on balance, live longer, live happily than the general population.
And that's one that encourages me.
I mean, literally longer lives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure. Just think about it. You got someone you can talk to and relate to
exactly
all the time. You know, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like Joan and I, you know, we've been retired over 30 years and we are together 24/7, and we just tell our sons, we just don't have enough time together.
That's good, Jerry.
We don't spend enough time together.
And Jerry, how do you do that and not get tired of each other? Yes, that's... And how do you stand each other after so long?
Yeah.
I know it. Well, doggone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at you. You're in the prime of your life, that long, good age. Yeah.
We are.
Yeah. Looking healthy, bright.
I'm pushing 90, and it's the best years of my life.
Good for you. Yeah.
You know, Dennis, while we're in this discussion, would maybe somehow, you know, I'm really buying into this Jesus in me and me and Jesus, all in all. I love that. I'm really buying into that. So somehow can we connect our conversations with, we're talking about God,
mm-hmm.
and somehow connect that with our today, all in all, lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I want to do, is I want to bring it all together. And the bottom line is, all mm-hmm. in all, right? That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow connect our conversation with that. I don't know if that's, you know, possible or what, but.
Well, right, Jerry, I'm trusting that we can and will. If not today, we will eventually. But I think it's at this point, let me just say from my own perspective, I know God has, he's all in all. I know that he lives in me. I exist in him. I don't have any other existence. If I am aware of that and adhere my life to that, oh wow, I exist in God. And if I live my life in tune with him, things seem to go along much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then if I think, oh, okay, yeah, maybe I'd like to do some things that of my own choice here. All right, God. Yeah, you exist in me. I exist in you. My life is yours. But I seem to have this proclivity to want to do some things my own way. Then I realize, that life doesn't go so well.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, what's wrong with this?
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers your question, Jerry, but for me,
yeah,
when I look at my existence in the Father, in the Father in me, there's a harmony that produces a life that has got meaning. Things seem to be in order.
Mm-hmm.
Things seem to follow a predictable path. Then when I choose not to recognize that and deliberately go against the grain,
mm-hmm.
I get the licks.
You know, so over this, I would say the last year and a half or more, as we've studied this, I find my life is more self-correcting.
Mm.
That's good. That realizing that I'm not separated from God, I never am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I step out of that temporarily, because my life is God, I mean, He is myself.
Mm-hmm.
My life is self-correcting. And I really don't have to worry about sin anymore.
I like that, Arnold.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're in the flow, things do work better.
I like that self-correcting, Arnold. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good description.
Yeah. That's better than any autocorrect, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
darn autocorrect.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trusting that what we're seeing here today is a further understanding of who God is, that there's two ways to see Him. He's the same God, but there's two ways to see Him. And I've mm-hmm. used the illustration, you mentioned the sun, Beth. The sun is a fiery, consuming ball of energy in the sky. And if we get too exposed to it, it has consequences. Too much exposure to it. But if we know and understand the sun as a force of warmth, of light, actually healing, that's the sun I want to appreciate. And I want to work and live my life in harmony with that. And being careful not to expose myself to and unnaturally to the other side. It's the same sun. Now, if you're God, which side of you do you want men to most appreciate and be in harmony with?
Yeah, that's an excellent example to me. The sun. Yeah, why would he go out and get myself burned by a sun? when you got all the protection in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And okay, so Paul is saying now the indignation of God is being revealed at the same time that God's righteousness is being revealed. What he seemed to be saying is, all right, I want to present to you an understanding of why there's so much problem in life, and that there's a solution. And up to this point, humanity or history or civilization had never heard that viewpoint. Now, I don't care what God, even the sun God, was a fearsome god. You know, all the Greek gods were very fearsome. There are very few Greek that I know of gods that had were all good. They all had their jealous or fearsome side, and more so. And along comes Paul and saying, I want to disclose to you a full view of who God is, the righteousness or the indignation. And because the world is in such state, I want to show you how, where that's come from, the origin of that. This is so, it's so philosophically basic to understanding God, us, the meaning of life, the course of our history, everything revolves around who is our God, and are we in line with that, with who we know God truly to be and who he wants us to know him as.
I'd like to think of it as I've deliberately chosen now the tree of life,
mm-hmm.
as my life.
Mm. Now, let me just borrow on that a moment, Arnold. Yeah. You've made that choice, but do you have the choice to also find yourself wanting to do something separate from that?
Well, self-correcting, as I mentioned, but also I wouldn't want to go to that. I wouldn't want to go back there.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't have the scripture to back this up, but I think God wants his people to truly join him by choice in the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Jesus fits in. I weigh the truth and the life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dennis, we got the tree of life. Okay, so you talked about this opposites stuff. So do we have to go in the other direction of the tree of life to appreciate the tree of life? Do we have to experience the downside to be able to experience the right side?
Yeah, good question, Jerry. Just how much of the opposite do I have to endure to realize what the real truth is?
Yeah, right, exactly.
See, if what we're saying is true, that we can't know anything other than its opposite, other than by its opposite, then
right. There
is the reality of that. We have to taste of death in order to appreciate life.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how much of death do you want to taste of before you?
Exactly. Right.
But I mean, the tree of knowledge is what we're born into and all
right.
know.
Yeah.
Until we experience Jesus,
mm-hmm.
the revelation,
mm-hmm.
the relationship. But we come into this world knowing only the tree of knowledge,
right,
until it's, how mm-hmm. does Paul say it, till it's revealed in our hearts or yeah. Something like that.
So you're right,
or our minds, the renewing of our minds.
Yeah, that so one. In a way, aren't we already, we're born into this default,
okay,
which is a tree of knowledge, and we're already experiencing the hardships and reality of that. And now that learning process, that experiencing, the experience that we are having, brings the reality of God into perspective as we've never seen it before. Does that make sense? We our eyes are open to who really God is in a much, much more beautiful, favorable, attractive way. Oh God, I've tasted enough of death. Now yeah. I understand your life so much better. And is that the purpose of God? Think of it. How can we know life? Did he? I want to leave you with this one. This you'll wake up at night sleeping, or wake up from sleeping, churning over this question. Did God make Eve choose the tree of knowledge?
That toxic masculinity at work. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah. But when we think about it, where was God in that? If it's true what Norman Grubb talks about with Satan was God's convenient agent. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if that's true, then what was God using Satan to do?
Exactly that.
Have his taste of death so that we could know life. We'll talk more about this. This is heavy because it's an area where people really struggle. Okay, I can't believe God would permit or ordain that I would endure suffering.
Yeah.
Really? Well, Scripture seems to teach that very strongly. Mm-hmm. Why? Why would God do that?
Yeah.
He's got some purpose.
You understand him more.
And the other issue we're going to have some struggle with is the word or the whole idea of judgment of God. Are the judgments of God final, punitive, or are they corrective, redemptive?
Well, doesn't the scripture say that the sin is gone, and I will remember it no, it's far as the east is from the west, mm-hmm. which is a long way, long, mm-hmm. long way. It's infinity, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything left to judge. honestly, I mean that.
Yes, no. Yeah. It's settled. What reason would God be mad at you for anymore? He has settled the sin issue and the death of Christ.
On the cross.
Yeah. And is God's plan to destroy his creation?
Never
reconcile it. We've grown up in a theology, at least I did, gang, that saw God as very punitive. And he's going to have his way. He's going to destroy everybody who didn't believe and sinned against him.
But just like the word wrath versus indignation,
mm-hmm.
I'd say every translation except for the concordant one uses wrath.
Yeah.
When it's really anger,
mm-hmm.
with wrath comes this sense of judgment,
mm-hmm.
and it's extreme anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
It doesn't wrath conjure up in your mind? It doesn't mind that I'm going to settle it for all. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to wipe you out.
Wipe you out. Yeah.
That's the beauty of finding translations like this that goes back to what was the concordant use of the original Greek word? And you understand, that's what you're, I think we understand a little bit more some of the assumptions, the presumptions that were in the minds of the early English translators. particularly they all follow pretty much the first translation into English, was King James. And by and large, the translators of the King James Bible were all pretty much persuaded that God is an angry God. The theology that they worked with at that time was right out of Augustine. Look out, God's going to get you. So words like wrath and judgment had a whole different meaning. Hmm. Yeah, Jerry, you were going to say.
No, I just, you know, I think of these old time preachers that would get up at the pulpit and hellstone and brimfire and, yeah, you know, right. You're going to go to hell if you don't do this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a theology at that time.
It was, Jerry. I was raised in that theology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was very hard for me to, when you ever talked about God as a loving father, there was always this contradiction going on in my mind. Well, but you talk about God as hellfire, and I'm going to be thrown into hell.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, well, God is loving. And then here's the other kicker. I grew up in what was called appeasement theology. You know what that means?
Mm-mm.
That the only way that I could be rescued was that Jesus appeased the anger and the wrath of the Father for my sins.
Wow. Oh, brother. That's heavy.
And that's a very current theology, Terry. Even today.
Really? It's current now?
Yeah, wow. The appeasement. That the only way that I have peace with God is because Jesus satisfied the anger of the Father.
Oh, brother.
He poured out his anger on his own sons.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if that... Arnold, maybe you can relate because you grew up in the same denominational background that I did.
Yeah, the guilt.
That was the view of Father God. I used to argue with guys in seminary even who told me anything different about God. No, you guys don't get it. he's going to torch us if we don't do.
Is that the theology that, because people just talk about Jesus as being our advocate?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much so. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that
he always has to stand in the way of God pouring out. God's ready to put the dagger in us, but Jesus said, no, he's a good guy. I died for him.
And Jesus has to do that every single time instead of once for all time.
He has to stand in our way. He has to give God the rose-colored glasses. So
over and over.
Yeah. So he'll look at us in a loving way, or see us for who saved, covered.
You know, all these religions are just Baptist, Catholic, Lutheran, you know, they just nail you with all this stuff. When I was in high school, after a ball game on Friday night, if I ate meat before midnight, I was going to go to hell. Can you imagine that? If I ate meat before midnight, I was going to go to hell.
Wow, Jerry. I mean, how did you get saved from that?
Dennis, I tuned into Zoom one Sunday morning.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
No, I literally, folks, my seminary professors pounded into my head, unless you get on your knees and beg forgiveness every day.
Yeah.
And man, what a treadmill life.
Well, did you know the Pope goes to confession every day?
The Pope does.
Yeah, the Pope.
You know. Jerry, who's his confessor?
That's a good question.
He just stands in front of a mirror.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, who's his confessors, right?
He goes in the booth and hopes somebody on the other side.
Oh, man.
Oh, folks, good conversation. Thanks for enduring these deep philosophical and theological.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and Arnold, thank Arnold for a story today.
Great story.
Story time.
Nothing like a story. And by the way, this, if you look at it, Romans is like a story. And every good story has an antagonist. And this is what we're seeing right off the bat. Here is every good story opens up. The movie starts, oh, the damsel's in distress. Only here we have humanity in distress, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so we're going to see the prince come to rescue.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
All right, well, have a good week.
Yes.
Good
Thank
week.
You.
Yeah.
Have a good week, guys.
Go in Jesus.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Be blessed.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.